Well, welcome to another exciting issue of Launch, where we talk about businesses that are starting and entrepreneurs and inventors. And this is Ron Reardon. My co-host, Jim DeBetta, is at an all-day conference where he's a speaker, featured speaker. And we also have our producer, Lee Cantor, here. Hey, Lee, how you doing?
I am doing great, Ron. I'm so excited about the show. I saw this guy's website, and he's just an unbelievably talented person.
Yeah, we're really fortunate to have Brian Gates of Design My Idea. Yeah, it's a product development company that provides inventors and corporations with a variety of creative services. And he's a graduate of Purdue, you know, with a degree in computer graphics technology. His company, Design My Idea, has been around since 2006, and he's developed well over 100 different products and secured a number of patents. So welcome, Brian.
Thank you very much, Ron.
Yeah,
glad to be here.
Yeah, glad that you're calling in today. Tell us just a little bit about your company, Brian.
Well, as like you mentioned in your intro there, we mainly focus on developing ideas and concepts. So we offer everything from industrial design, engineering, prototyping, and then ultimately branding for the products. And so our end goal is to take those concepts, refine them, and get them ready for the market so they're successful for the inventors and companies that are selling the products.
Okay, that's cool. You know, I'm a patent agent, so, you know, patents is what I do. And, you know, Jim takes care of the marketing part. But I always tell folks that, you know, the timing of filing the patent is really important. So from your perspective, you know, when should they secure a patent on their idea if it still needs to be designed?
What we usually tell inventors is basically file for a provisional patent to get started. Get the idea out there, get it secured, and then as we're defining the idea, be in contact with a patent attorney. So as the design is completed, the patent attorney can basically hit the ground running, having the PPA already filed, and then basically taking the finalized design and then going with that in the final patent. Because we've seen a couple times with inventors that they come with kind of loosely defined concepts that haven't necessarily been touched by an engineer, and some of the aspects may need to be modified. So it's best to kind of get that PPA out of the way, get the idea documented, and then go ahead and refine it and get it ready for a full patent.
Okay.
That's recommend.
Yeah, I think it's a real good process of, you know, if it's an idea on a napkin or they've got, you know, a baling wire and chewing gum or modeling clay, cardboard kind of prototype, that, you know, they nail down the data conception, you know, and get that provisional patent application in there. Because I think what a lot of inventors don't realize is that they are going to go through several iterations before they come up with what actually gets put on a store shelf.
Absolutely.
Now, Brian, have you ever seen cases where somebody had an idea and maybe it wasn't doing well and then somebody's redesigned it and then all of a sudden it takes off?
Yeah, absolutely. We've had a couple products come our way with that angle in mind where their sales were flat and they kind of missed the mark on some of the aspects of the product. So what industrial designers would do for that product or an engineer is look at the concepts, look at how it's used, and maybe refine some of the functions on how the user relates to the product. So there may be the item might not have an ergonomic sense to it, so it may not feel natural or intuitive to the user when they're using the device, which could take away from value of the product. So if we can refine that and add that value back in, it becomes a lot more successful in a sense that consumers are happier with their experience and more apt to recommend the product or purchase more.
Okay. Well, you know, if I come to you with an idea on a napkin or maybe, you know, a very rough, you know, carved out of wood, whatever, prototype, how does the design process work? And can you explain your process?
Yeah, our first step when we sit down with an inventor is we want to figure out where they're at and where they'd like to go. And so we want to see what research they've done for their product. If they have, let's say, a wood prototype or even just a sketch on a napkin, we want to know, what have they done in their research as far as getting from A to where they currently are, and then where they want to go. And once we figure out kind of where they're at and where they're going, we put together kind of a roadmap of what steps would need to be completed in order to get from A to B. So we'd like to see a good amount of research in there to kind of back up the claims for their invention and make sure that they're understanding that in this process for inventing, there's the more research you have, to back up your investment, the more successful in the long run you'll tend to be. And so if that research is in place, then we can kind of build off that and then go into industrial design, where we basically, again, look at the ergonomics of the device, usability, the aesthetics, kind of basically the presentation and how it's used. And then from there, we look at the engineering aspects as well, how it's going to be produced, what materials, what mechanical devices, electrical devices that may need to go on the product, define those, get those ready for basically production and prototyping. And then from there out, we would either do a prototype to basically validate the design, or even do some simulations there as well, depending on the complexity of the device. And then from there, we move basically into production and branding of the product.
Okay. Well, is some of what you do kind of educating the inventor as to what the process is? Because I know a lot of inventors, you know, feel like they can do everything themselves, and they don't really understand that they're going to need a team of people with a lot of different specialties. So, you know, what does an industrial designer do for an inventor and for the invention?
Well, an industrial designer is really critical and needed basically at the concept stage of an invention. Because basically at that point, the industrial designer is going to look at the idea and see if there's any ways to add value to the product. So that, again, that might be refining the aesthetics of the device, so how it looks, if there's any styling cues we can bring into the product. You know, let's say a decade ago, stylings of products weren't as critical as, let's say, the function or of the devices. You look at a lot of the products out there now, they've all been touched by industrial designers. They have that design styling to them. They have the aesthetic appeal. They invoke emotions. They'll also have, you know, good example is the iPhone. You look at the usability of the iPhone, it's probably one of the most intuitive devices out there, and Apple spent a long time on developing that user interface. You know, and then the styling and how it's held in hand, all these different things go into adding value and creating the best user experience for your product. And an industrial designer has the knowledge and expertise in that to know what to add to the device without going overboard. And so there's a good balance there of defining what is going to really add value and what's going to make it intuitive and what's going to have the aesthetic appeal without going outside the boundaries of, let's say, taste or overkill as far as the design goes.
Okay. Well, I know a lot of inexperienced inventors will say that, you know, I've got an idea and I just want to sell my idea to a company. So they're like, you know, do I really need a prototype? Why do I need a prototype?
Well, prototypes can be kind of classified in three separate stages. I think a lot of inventors think, I need a prototype, and what they're really thinking is I need a production sample of what is going to come right off my assembly line. It's going to look exactly the way I envision it, and it's going to function in every way possible. The only thing is they're really not capable or willing to, and say, invest the money in order to achieve that. So we kind of try to tell people there's different levels of prototypes. We kind of break it up into three categories. There's a functional, non-functional, and then a production sample. So a functional prototype would be something like a proof of concept. So that may be your block of wood that's shaved out in order to test out the product. You know, it doesn't necessarily look like the finished product, but it proves that the concept will work. Now, we may use different material in the end. There may be some different aspects, but it proves that the idea is valid. Then on the other end of that is a non-functional prototype, which would be something that looks the part, but doesn't necessarily function. So there's different applications on why you would want one or the other when you're presenting your idea.
Is it possible to take, to do kind of a prototype in the computer where you just kind of see it?
Absolutely. And one of the services we offer is our Virtue Type, where we can basically develop a 3D model of the product and allow users to experience it online. So they can move it around, they can simulate device function, they can change materials and colors on the product, they can explode it, all these different things. It's all web-based. You don't need any special software to view it. Those types of simulations add a lot of value as far as presenting the idea. We've also seen a lot of times, too, having that functional prototype that may not look anything like what you're going to see produced adds a lot of value when you're presenting the idea to licensors. So if you have that functional prototype and maybe, let's say, a simulation of what the finished product would be like, you can say, here's how this proves the idea, and here's what we envision this looking like when it's finally completed. That type of presentation goes a long way, and we've seen several products get picked up just based on that.
Yeah, because all of a sudden, you know, the license person that they're presenting to for a license can kind of connect the dots and like, okay, I understand now, you know, how a user would do that, and then they can calculate how much money they can make.
Exactly. And say one of prime examples, an exercise equipment we've been working on. The inventor had a prototype that they had built by a machinist, and so it's this very industrial-looking, kind of menacing device where proves the concept beautifully. I mean, it really gives you a great workout. And we came back and did a consumer-friendly version that had those styling cues and did some renderings and simulations of it. They're doing fantastic with it. And I say it was great to kind of have that prototype just so they could really try it and say, wow, this really works you out. This is great. And then having basically the pretty picture say, this is what it's going to look like when you produce the product.
Right. And when you're looking at functional, non-functional, and production samples, I know the standard answer, you know, in my arena is it depends. But can you give us some ranges of what the cost would be to an inventor for the different levels of prototypes, you know, and the virtual?
Sure. And say virtual prototypes usually for us run around $1,200.
Okay.
And say that covers those modeling it and getting it basically ready for simulations. And it kind of varies there depending on the complexity of the model.
Sure.
As far as non-functional prototypes, it really kind of depends on the scale of the product. But I'd say for rapid prototyping, let's say it's got 5 parts and is 10 by 10 by 10, that would usually run somewhere around $1,800. Then for functional prototypes, those kind of can go up. We've had some prototypes well into $25,000, $30,000, $40,000, depending on the products that go in there. And then for production sample, you've got, let's say, if we do like an aluminum tooling and everything for the plastics and there's parts there, I mean, that, you could be up in the 6 figures for those.
Okay.
And are your clients typically, you know, inventors, or are they like big corporations that are, you know, have lots of inventions?
You know, we really run the full gamut. I say most of our clients, I would say, are informed inventors. But with that being said, we've also worked with, you know, several very large companies. So we don't necessarily discriminate one from the other. Say any product that comes in our way, we're going to treat as though it's the only product we have.
Very good. Yeah, I like your phrase, informed inventors. Okay, that's good, as opposed to the clueless or the Yahoo inventors,
right,
that just came up with it. But these people know what they're doing, and they understand that they're going to have to spend some money in order to get this thing developed, and they understand the risk that, you know, it could be that the product, you know, either doesn't sell or is not picked up for a license or things like that.
Now, how did you get into this, and were you always an industrial designer?
I was. I'd say, go way back here. Back in high school, I always kind of knew from day one I wanted to be an engineer. And so I did a lot of drafting in high school, and then I got into college, and I was in their engineering program to start off. And there I got an internship working at a Universal Remote Company, so all those wonderful universal remotes you have in your house that you never use. I got my feet wet with industrial design there. I didn't quite have enough knowledge in the CAD packages to be valuable in their mechanical engineering department, so they said, okay, go work in industrial design. And I just fell in love with it there. I found out I had real talent for it, and I just loved the aspect of conceptualizing products. And what I noticed kind of working in that company was there was a big disconnect between the wants of the industrial designers and the wants of the engineers, the mechanical engineers. They didn't seem to be seeing eye to eye on everything. The industrial designers always wanted the smaller, thinner, you know, possible remote as possible. And then the engineers would say, you know, sorry, Charlie, you can't do this because of these mechanical principles. And so it became kind of my mission to find basically a discipline that blended those two together, because it seemed to me a big disconnect there. If somebody's designing something and they don't necessarily know the limitations of the materials or the products, that there was, you know, it kind of drew out basically the design process. And so if you can find a discipline or have a skill set to kind of bridge that gap, you're basically designing practical inventions or practical design.
Yeah, and that's really good value. Let's talk a little bit about packaging. One of my favorite product evolution stories is the Crest spin toothbrush, which I think is now an Arm & Hammer spin toothbrush. And when I was looking at the patent for that, little circle that was on the original packaging that said "Try Me," where you could actually push the button and watch it spin, is actually one of the claims in the patent. If an informed inventor plans to do the packaging design themselves, is that a good idea?
I would say typically no. I say inventors, when it comes to inventors and their products, they sometimes get confused between functions and benefits. So when you're presenting your, basically the product packaging is the first line of contact between your product and the consumer. And so in a store setting, that you want that to stand out. You want it to clearly explain the benefits of the product and why the consumer needs that device. And so a packaging designer basically knows the triggers and the basically calls to action to present on that package in order to inspire or invoke basically a purchase for that product. And so having a packaging designer that can put together that branding for the product is well worth it. You don't want to skimp on that because that's really a very critical part to that product success.
Yeah, because my understanding is that, that you normally have about 2 seconds or less when a consumer is kind of walking by the aisle and scanning stuff to really grab their attention for them to draw them in to look a little bit deeper as to whether or not they want to purchase something.
Absolutely. And we've had several companies come to us with, again, great products, but they're branded so poorly that they're slumping in sales. A simple redesign of the package is completely turn the product around.
Yeah, because I know a lot of inventors that are not informed believe that once they've invented the product, that's it, and they don't even think about the packaging.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so if I plan to license my idea, is it worth investing in branding design?
It definitely is. I'd say you don't want to go overboard with it, but it gives, I'd say, especially when you're presenting the idea, it's a more professional presentation, and it looks like a more completed product. And so from a licensor's perspective, for them, if they've got a complete package, it's easy money in a sense. And so the more complete, the more professional the idea is and the level of presentation, the more apt they're going to be to sign on board.
Okay. Well, I know a lot of inventors, it's rare that you ever find an inventor or a company that just says, money is no object, do the best you can, and I'll just write the checks, no problem. If I'm an informed inventor and I'm on a limited budget, what steps would you recommend for my invention development?
The great thing with inventing and kind of the inventing process is there really isn't a linear path to get from A to B. So the best thing for an inventor that we always recommend is research. That's something that you can do on your own, and it's going to be invaluable for your product. So knowing the market, knowing your competitors, knowing the potential of that product for that market, those aspects are compelling. And so having those as fuel for your product really can drive home the idea of why this is valuable to licensors. Provisional patents, applications, those are something, again, you can do on your own. We have a kit on our website that's free that will basically go step by step on how to fill one out and then the filing process. All these things you can kind of do on your own. And, once you get to the point where, you can't quite do it or you know that what you're putting forth isn't going to quite cut it, then seek help from a professional. And say, we offer our services a la carte. So if you need us just for industrial design, we can provide just that service. If you need us for the full gamut, we can do that as well. So use basically designers and firms to kind of augment what you're not capable of producing.
Okay. Well, I know that, once you've produced a production sample, and you've got a virtual 3D or like that, that's not what's needed for manufacturing. Can you give me an idea what's necessary for manufacturing the invention?
Yeah. Basically, for manufacturing, like you said, the pretty picture or the simulation isn't necessarily what a manufacturer is going to want. They want something along the lines of a bill of materials. And basically what that bill of materials is going to contain is the list of parts, the specifications for those parts, the materials, basically the ingredients or recipe, if you will, for producing that product. Along with that, there's going to be CAD data, typically, which basically defines the form of the device. And so if there's any sort of electrical components or maybe schematics, all these engineering documents basically go into preparing and producing the product. And the more thorough your documentation is on that product, the more likely you're going to get a product to spec, essentially, especially if you're going overseas. You want to define as much as you can, because if you leave any, say, windows for somebody to kind of get creative on their end, you may get something back you're not necessarily expecting.
Now, do you have any kind of home run stories you can share?
Yeah, one of our recent home runs here, great example of the value of a sales sheet. An inventor came to us back here in March and had a novelty product idea, and I can't quite give away the idea because it'll be in store shelves here in January, but great product, just novel idea, and it made us laugh when we heard it. And we did a sales sheet for him, did a 3D rendering, and he went out to several novelty item manufacturers and sat down with the first one. He loved the idea, said, "Here's my offer to you," and licensed the product on that very first meeting. And say, just having that presentation and that sales sheet got him a licensing deal. And a great example of how valuable like a sales sheet and a presentation goes is before, you know, he kind of had some hand-drawn sketches that didn't quite convey the idea, whereas a 3D model and a well-put-together sales sheet instantly got him that licensing agreement. I won't tout that as an everyday occurrence, but it's definitely a great success story.
Something. Now, from a manufacturing standpoint, when the informed inventor comes to you and they got everything ready to go manufacture, where do they go from there? Do you connect them with somebody, or you got relationships with manufacturers?
We do have relationships with manufacturers, and say we have also several sources we work with as well, so we can basically secure quotes for them or help guide them on how to secure quotes.
Okay. Well, you know, we had Edie Tochin on our show not too long ago, and she was talking about a new law here in the United States about safety. And when you're looking at designing things and all, what role does safety play in what you do?
A very big role. We obviously, if we're designing a product, our name is attached to it on a lot of levels. So we don't want to put forth a product that either A isn't going to meet government requirements, or B is going to be a danger to the consumer. And so when we're designing a product, our engineers and our, let's say, designers are very familiar with the guidelines as far as what needs to be taken into consideration when developing the product.
Okay. Well, I know a lot of vendors are always looking for the magic formula that applies to every single product. I mean, you mentioned that, you know, what you do is not a linear process. And I'm, you know, I mentioned that it depends is always the phrase that I use. Do you have certain cookie cutter processes, or is everything kind of one off?
We do have, I say, in the branding aspect of it, I say for developing like a sales sheet or a simulation, those are pretty cookie cutter as far as the methods that go into it. Now, as far as what's generated on the output, it's unique for every product, but the process involved for, let's say, presenting the idea, we've kind of followed basically the guidelines for what you would see like on a magazine cover. That's kind of the best way to put it, sum it up for a sales sheet. You want to give enough information about the contents of the magazine that the user is inspired to pick it up and read it. Likewise, for a sales sheet, we want to put enough information there that the viewer is inspired to contact the inventor.
Okay.
We don't want to answer all the questions. We just want to answer enough of them to make them want to know more. And so those kind of processes are pretty much cookie cutter for everything we do, whereas engineering, it depends on, let's say, the complexities for the device. If it's something purely mechanical, then let's say we don't necessarily need to go involve an electrical engineer, because they're expertise aren't necessarily needed to developing the product.
Do you have any stories where somebody brought you something and maybe you weren't that enamored with it, and you know, then you get into it and you start doing it, and then it became a big seller, like something that surprised you?
Yes, actually, a really small product. It's called Moby Grip, and the inventor, we've been working with him now for about a year and a half or so. We first got the product. I wasn't too sold on the idea. And basically, let me, I guess, back up here and explain what the idea is. Moby Grip is basically a device leash for your mobile devices, so for your cell phone, basically. And what it is it's a plastic, like, dot, essentially, about the size of a quarter, and it contains a small bungee in it. And so that would adhere to the back of your cell phone, and then you would slip your finger through the bungee to prevent you from dropping or basically losing the cell phone. Doesn't sound overly intriguing, and I think we did about 40 or 50 different variations on that product, and kind of some different concepts for them. And as we continued to develop the product, we got, you know, man, this is going to be really great. This is going to be really cool. And we finally got the production samples and tested it out. We love it. I think everybody has one on their phone now, and the interest level for the product is going through the roof. But as kind of an example for us, we've kind of like, who's going to want to stick something to the back of their phone? But once you have it on there, it's something you can't live without.
Yeah, so I've come to the conclusion that I don't think anybody can really predict what's going to sell and what's not going to sell. It really waits until it gets out there with the consumer, especially with something that's not been done before.
Absolutely. And that's kind of our premise, too. That's what we kind of like to see. Inventors who have done the research is that we will definitely kind of come back and say, you know, this really isn't going to be manufacturable. There's engineering here. There's some critical issues that may need to be considered. But we don't necessarily like to weigh in on whether or not this is going to be a market success, because, as to your point, Ron, it's anybody's guess.
That's right.
Products that we think, man, this is going to do incredible, and they don't do so hot. And then likewise, we've seen other products, like the Moby Grip, that we think, man, this isn't going to go anywhere, and things all over.
Yeah, because I remember, I think it was the president of IBM that said many years ago that there was room in the world for 5 computers. I think he missed it a little bit.
Yep.
And it's similar, and you know, when I started working with AT&T and Bell South, you know, and cellular was just starting, we figured that the only people that would be using cell phones, you know, would probably be, you know, people that were in charge of construction and doctors and people in real estate, and that'd be pretty much it. And now, you know, 10-year-old kids will get their own cell phone. So what's your best advice for an inventor that needs design services?
Well, my best advice is research. Again, research, research, research. I can't stress that enough. Develop the idea. Define what that problem that's being solved. See what your market potential is out there. All these things you can kind of do on your own. If you have that research to kind of back you up at the beginning stages, that could be critical as far as developing the design. That could be critical as far as presenting the concepts to licensors. So it's going to help you throughout the entire process. Another thing I'd recommend is define your path to success. Set goals. Set up where you might need basically help in the design process, and then set budgets for each basically development stage and goals for those stages. So I put together a roadmap and, you know, achieve each goal as you're going through it.
Okay. Well, when you talk about research, one of the recommendations I give to inventors when we're chatting is that they need to have a 1-to-5 ratio between the manufactured package cost and what a consumer would pay for it at retail. As you go through the design service, do you ever come up with situations where you realize that the inventor is not going to be able to make this thing profitably?
Absolutely. And that's usually one of the questions we ask right at the beginning is, what do you intend to sell this to for the consumer? So if they come back and say, you know, I have a new car and I expect to sell this for $50 to the consumer, right then and there we can say, you know, that's unattainable, or there's going to be some critical issues in hitting that price point. And so we want to know right off the bat where they're planning to position their product.
Okay. Well, this is cool. Really appreciate you having on the show. How can our listeners get in touch with you?
We have a wonderful website, designmyidea.com. On there, there's examples and explanations about each different, let's say, facet as far as developing a product. Like I said, our provisional patent kit is on there. And then there's a bunch of great articles and links. So our website is probably the best way to kind of get familiar with our company. We also have an 800 number, which is 800-862-0546. And that's a great way to get a hold of us as well.
Okay. Well, I know that when you and I met out there in Las Vegas, that Kim Babchick of QVC basically said that you were the rock star in this area. She's really impressed with your work.
Kim's wonderful. I definitely recommend her to anybody seeking licensing. She's fantastic. We really enjoyed working with her.
Okay. Well, Brian, thanks again for calling in and being part of our show. I think you've given our listeners some really incredible information in this area, and they're really going to appreciate it.
I appreciate you having me on, Ron.
Okay. Well, this is Ron Reardon and Lee Cantor and the absent Jim DeBetta signing off for another exciting issue of Launch.